met my breast. He loosened his grip, clearly appalled, but lunged as I pulled away, his fingers catching my neckline. Horrified, I watched in slow motion as the delicate fabric tore, as his feet tangled in my skirt. As we clutched one another, trying and failing to regain our balance. As we tumbled through the curtain and onto the stage, the audience gave a collective gasp, then fell silent. No one dared breathe, not even me. The chasseur, who still held me atop him from our fall, stared up at me with wide eyes. I watched, numb, as dozens of emotions flitted across his face. Shock, panic, humiliation, rage. The hook-nosed girls skidded out after us, and the spell was broken. "You disgusting pig!" The chasseur flung me away like I'd bitten him, and I landed on my backside, hard. Angry cries from the audience erupted as my dress gaped open. They took in my bruised face, my torn bodice, and made their own assumptions. But I didn't care. Staring out at the audience, horror seeped through me as I imagined who could be staring back. The blood left my face. The hook-nosed girl wrapped her arms around me, gently helping me to my feet and leading me backstage. Two burly crew members appeared and seized the chasseur as well. The crowd shouted their approval as they frog-marched him behind us. I glanced back, surprised he wasn't putting up a fight, but his face was as white as my own. The girl grabbed the sheet from one of the crates and draped it around me. "Are you all right?" I ignored her ridiculous question. Of course I wasn't all right. What had just happened? "Hopefully they throw him in prison." She glared at the chasseur, who stood amidst the crew in a daze. The audience still shouted their outrage. "They won't," I said grimly. "He's a chasseur."
"We'll all give our statements."
She stuck her chin out and gestured to the crew. They hovered awkwardly, unsure of what to do.
"We saw the whole thing. You're so lucky you were here."
She glanced at my torn dress, eyes flashing.
"Who knows what could have happened?"
I didn't correct her. I needed to leave. This whole fiasco had been a shoddy attempt at escape, and this was my last chance. The chasseur couldn't stop me now, but the constabulary would arrive soon. They wouldn't care what the audience thought they'd seen. They'd cart me off to prison, regardless of my torn dress and bruises. And it would be all too easy for the chasseurs to procure me once this mess had been sorted out. I knew where that would lead. A stake and a match. I'd just decided to throw caution to the winds and run for it, perhaps slip Angelica's ring between my teeth once I reached the stairwell, when the door to stage right creaked open. My heart stopped as the Archbishop stepped through. He was shorter than I thought, though still taller than me, with salt-and-pepper hair and steely blue eyes. They flared briefly as he took me in. The bruised face, the ratted hair, the sheet draped around my shoulders, then narrowed at the devastation around me. His lip curled. He jerked his head toward the exit.
"Leave us."
The crew didn't need to be told twice, and neither did I. I nearly tripped over my feet in an effort to vacate the premises as quickly as possible. The chasseur's hand snaked out and caught my arm.
"Not you,"
the Archbishop commanded. The hook-nosed girl hesitated, her eyes darting between the three of us. One look from the Archbishop, however, had her scurrying out the door. The chasseur released me the second she disappeared and bowed to the Archbishop, covering his heart with his fist.
"This is the woman from Tremblay's townhouse, Your Eminence."
The Archbishop nodded curtly, his eyes returning to mine. Again they searched my face, and again they hardened, as if my worth had been tallied and found lacking. He clasped stiff hands behind his back.
"So, you are our escaped thief."
I nodded, not daring to breathe. It said thief, not witch.
You have put us all in quite the predicament, my dear.
I...
Silence.
My mouth snapped shut. I wasn't stupid enough to argue with the Archbishop. If anyone dwelled above the law, it was him. He walked toward me slowly, hands still clasped behind his back.
You're a clever thief, aren't you? Quite talented in eluding capture. How did you escape the rooftop last night? Captain Diggory assures me the townhouse was surrounded.
I swallowed hard. There was that word again. Thief, not witch. Hope fluttered in my stomach. I glanced at the copper-haired chasseur, but his face revealed nothing. My friend helped me, I lied. He raised a brow.
Your friend, the witch.
Dread snaked down my spine, but Coco was miles away now, safe and hidden within La Forêt des Yeux, the forest of eyes. The chasseurs would never be able to track her there. Even if they did, her coven would protect her. I maintained careful eye contact, careful not to twitch or fidget, or otherwise give myself away. She is a witch, yes.
How?
How is she a witch? Though I knew I shouldn't bait him, I also couldn't help it.
I believe when a witch and a man love each other very much...
He struck me across the face. The slap echoed in the silence of the empty auditorium. Somehow the audience had been cleared away as quickly as the crew. Clutching my cheek, I glared at him in silent fury. The chasseur shifted uncomfortably beside me.
You disgusting child.
The Archbishop's eyes bulged alarmingly.
How did it help you escape?
I will not betray her secrets.
You dare to conceal information?
A knock sounded from stage right, and a constable stepped forward.
Your Holiness, a crowd has formed outside. Several of the attendants and crew, they refuse to leave until they learn the fate of the girl and Captain Diggory. They are beginning to attract attention. We will be along shortly.
The Archbishop straightened and adjusted his coral robes, taking a deep breath. The constable bowed and ducked outside once more. He returned his attention to me. A long moment of silence passed as we glared at each other.
What am I going to do with you?
I dared not speak again. My face could only handle so much.
You are a criminal who consorts with demons. You have publicly framed a chasseur for assault, among other things.
His lip curled, and he regarded me with palpable disgust. I tried and failed to ignore the shame churning in my stomach. It had been an accident. I hadn't framed him intentionally, and yet, if the audience's misapprehension helped me escape the stake, I'd never claimed to be honorable.
Captain Diggory's reputation will be ruined, the Archbishop continued. I will be forced to relieve him of his duties, lest the chasseur's holiness be questioned, lest my holiness be questioned.
His eyes burned into mine. I arranged my features into a contrite expression, lest his fist get twitchy again. Appeased by my repentance, he began to pace.
What am I going to do with you? What am I going to do?
Though I clearly repulsed him, his steely eyes kept drifting back to me, like a moth drawn to flame. They roved my face as if searching for something, lingering on my eyes, my nose, my mouth, my throat. To my dismay, I realized the ribbon had slipped during my scuffle with the chasseur. I hastily tightened it. The Archbishop's mouth pursed, and he resumed staring at me. It took all my willpower not to roll my eyes at his absurd inner struggle. I wasn't going to prison today, and I wasn't going to the stake either. For whatever reason, the Archbishop and his pet had decided I wasn't a witch. I certainly wasn't going to question their oversight. But the question remained. What did the Archbishop want? Because he definitely wanted something. The hunger in his eyes was unmistakable, and the sooner I figured it out, the sooner I could use it to my advantage. It took several seconds before I realized he'd continued his monologue.
"Thanks to your little sleight of hand."
He spun on his heel to face me, a peculiar sort of triumph in his expression.
"Perhaps a mutually beneficial arrangement can be made."
He paused, looking between us expectantly.
"I'm listening," I muttered.
The chasseur nodded stiffly.
"Excellent. It's quite simple, really. Marriage."
I stared at him, mouth falling open. He chuckled, but the sound was without mirth.
"As your wife, Reed, this distasteful creature would belong to you. You would have had every right to pursue her, to discipline her, especially after her indiscretions last night. It would have been expected, necessary even. There would have been no crime committed, no impurity to disparage. You would remain a chasseur."
I laughed. It came out a strangled, desperate sound. "I'm not marrying anyone." The Archbishop didn't share my laughter.
"You will if you wish to avoid a public lashing and imprisonment. Though I'm not chief of the constabulary, he is a dear friend."
I gaped at him. "You can't blackmail me." He waved a hand as if swatting an irksome fly.
"It is the sentence that awaits a thief. I would advise you to think very carefully about this, child."
I appealed to the chasseur, determined to keep a level head despite the panic clawing up my throat.
"You can't want this. Please, tell him to find another way."
"There is no other way,"
the Archbishop interjected. The chasseur stood very still indeed. He seemed to have stopped breathing.
"You are like a son to me, Reed."
The Archbishop reached up to clasp the chasseur's shoulder, a mouse comforting an elephant. Some disconnected part of my mind wanted to laugh.
"Do not throw away your life, your promise and career, your oath to God, for the sake of this heathen. Once she is your wife, you can lock her in the closet and never think of her again. You would have the legal right to do whatever you please with her."
He shot him a meaningful look.
"This arrangement would also solve other matters."
Blood finally returned to the chasseur's face. No, flooded his face. It raced up his throat and into his cheeks, burning hotter than even his eyes. His jaw clenched.
"Sir, I..."
But I didn't hear him. Saliva coated my mouth, and my vision narrowed. Marriage? To a chasseur? There had to be another way, any other way. Bile rose in my throat, and before I could stop it, I heaved a spectacular arc of vomit onto the Archbishop's feet. He leapt away from me with a disgusted cry.
"How dare you!"
He raised a fist to strike me once more, but the chasseur moved with lightning swiftness. His hand caught the Archbishop's wrist.
"If this woman is to be my wife," he said, swallowing hard, "you will not touch her again."
The Archbishop bared his teeth.
"You agree, then?"
The chasseur released his wrist and looked at me, a deeper blush creeping up his throat.
"Only if she does."
His words reminded me of Coco. "Take care of yourself. Only if you do." Coco had said I needed to find protection. I stared up at the copper-haired chasseur, at the Archbishop still rubbing his wrist. Perhaps protection had found me. Andre, Gru, the constabulary, her. None of them could harm me if I had a chasseur as a husband. Even the chasseurs themselves would cease to be a threat if I could keep up the act. If I could avoid doing magic near them. They'd never know I was a witch. I'd be hidden in plain sight. But I'd also have a husband. I didn't want a husband. Didn't want to be shackled to anyone in marriage, especially someone as stiff and self-righteous as this chasseur. But if marriage was my only alternative to spending life in prison, perhaps it was the most agreeable option. It certainly was the only option that would get me out of this theater unchained. After all, I still had Angelica's ring. I could always escape after the marriage certificate was signed. Right. I straightened my shoulders and raised my chin. I'll do it.
The ceremony. Reed. Shouts escalated outside the theater, but I barely heard them. Blood roared in my ears. It drowned out every other sound. Their cries for justice, the Archbishop's sympathy, but not her footsteps. I heard every one of those. Light. Lighter than mine, but more erratic, less measured. I focused on them, and the roaring in my ears gradually quieted. I could hear the theater manager and constabulary now, trying to calm the crowd. I resisted the urge to unsheathe my balisarda as the Archbishop opened the doors. My legs locked up, and my skin felt somehow hot and cold at the same time, and too small, much too small. It itched and pricked as every eye on the street turned toward us. A small, warm hand rested on my arm. Calloused palms, slender fingers, too bandaged. I glanced down. Broken. I didn't allow my eyes to follow her fingers up her arm, because her arm would lead to her shoulder, and her shoulder would lead to her face, and I knew what I'd find there. Two bruised eyes, and a fresh welt forming on her cheek. A scar above her eyebrow, another across her throat. It still peaked below the black ribbon, despite her attempt to hide it. Seeley's face rose in my mind, unblemished and pure. Oh God, Seeley. The Archbishop stepped forward, and the crowd immediately quieted. With a frown, he pulled me in front of him. The woman, the heathen, didn't relinquish her grip. I still didn't look at her.
Brothers,
the Archbishop's voice rang out across the now silent street, attracting even more attention. Every head turned in our direction, and she cringed into me. I glanced down at her then, frowning. Her eyes were wide, pupils dilated. Frightened, I turned away.
You cannot give me your heart, Reed. I cannot have it on my conscience. Seeley, please. Those monsters who murdered Pip are still out there. They must be punished. I will not distract you from your purpose. If you must give away your heart, give it to your brotherhood. Please, please, forget me.
I could never forget you.
Despair nearly knocked me to my knees. She would never forgive me.
Your concern for this woman has been seen and is appreciated by God.
The Archbishop spread his arms wide, beseeching.
But do not be deceived. After attempting to rob an aristocrat such as yourselves last night, she had the ill grace to flee her husband as he attempted to discipline her this morning. Do not pity her, friends. Pray for her.
A woman at the front of the crowd glared at the Archbishop with unabashed loathing. Slim, pale hair, upturned nose, I tensed, recognizing the woman from backstage.
You disgusting pig.
As if she sensed my gaze, her eyes flicked to me and narrowed. I stared back at her, trying and failing to forget her whispered condemnation.
Hopefully they throw him in prison. Who knows what could have happened?
I swallowed hard and looked away. Of course, that was what it had looked like. The little heathen knew her tricks, and I'd made it laughably easy. Fallen right into her trap, I cursed myself, longing to jerk my arm from her grasp. But that wouldn't do. too many people watched us, and the Archbishop had been clear in his orders.
"We must confess our duplicity as soon as we return home," he'd said, frowning as he paced. "The people must believe you are already married."
He turned toward her abruptly then.
"Am I correct in assuming your soul is unsaved?"
When she hadn't responded, he'd scowled.
"As I thought. We shall remedy both situations immediately and journey straight to the Dolor for baptism. You must act as her husband until we formalize the union, Reed. Take that ring from her right hand and move it to her left. Walk beside her. The charade may end the second the crowd disperses, and for goodness sake, recover her cloak."
The heathen twisted the ring in question now, shifted her feet, reached up to touch a piece of hair by her face. She'd pinned the rest into a snarled knot at her nape, wild and untamed, just like her. I loathed it.
"I implore you to see God's teaching in this woman," the Archbishop's voice rose. "Learn from her wickedness. Wives, obey your husbands. Repent your sinful natures. Only then can you be truly united with God."
Several members of the crowd nodded, murmuring their agreement.
"It's true, I've always said as much. Women folk are as bad as witches these days. What they all need is wood, the rod or the stake."
The pale-haired woman from backstage looked as if she'd like to inflict bodily harm on the Archbishop. She bared her teeth, fists clenched, before turning away. The heathen tensed beside me, her grip tightening painfully on my arm. I glared down at her, but she didn't let go. That's when I smelled it. Faint, subtle, almost too light to detect, but still there, lingering on the breeze. Magic. The Archbishop groaned. I turned, just as he doubled over and clutched his stomach.
"Sir, are you?" I stopped abruptly as he broke shockingly loud wind. His eyes flew open and his cheeks flamed red.
Mutters broke out in the crowd. Shocked, disgusted, he stood hastily, attempting to straighten his robes, but bent double again at the last second. Another bout racked his system. I placed a hand on his back, uncertain.
"Sir, leave me,"
he snarled. I backed away quickly and glared at the heathen, who shook with silent laughter.
"Stop laughing."
"I couldn't even if I wanted to."
She clutched a hand to her side, shaking, and a snort escaped her lips. I eyed her in growing distaste, bending down to inhale her scent.
"Cinnamon. Not magic."
I leaned away quickly, and she laughed harder.
"This, right here, this exact moment, it just might be worth marrying you, Shass. I'm gonna cherish it forever."
The Archbishop insisted the heathen and I walk to the Dolor for her baptism. He rode in his carriage. She scoffed as he disappeared down the street, kicking a rock at a nearby trash can.
"That man's head is so far up his own ass, he could wear it as a hat."
My jaw clenched. "Don't rise. Remain calm."
"You will not disrespect him." She grinned, tilting her head up to examine me. Then, incredibly, she rose to her toes and flicked me square on the nose. I staggered back, startled. My face flushed. She grinned wider and started walking.
"I will do what I please, Shass."
"You're to be my wife."
Catching up to her in two strides, I reached out to grab her arm, but stopped short of touching her.
"That means you'll obey me."
"Does it?"
She raised her brows, still grinning.
"I suppose that means you'll honor and protect me, then, if we're adhering to the dusty old roles of your patriarchy."
I shortened my pace to match hers.
"Yes."
She clapped her hands together.
"Excellent. At least this will be entertaining. I have many enemies."
I couldn't help it. I glanced at the deep bruises coloring her eyes.
"Imagine that."
"I wouldn't if I were you."
Her tone was conversational, light, as if we were discussing the weather. "You'll have nightmares for weeks." Questions burned up my throat, but I refused to voice them. She seemed content in the silence. Her eyes moved everywhere at once. to the dresses and hats lining shop windows, to the apricots and hazelnuts filling merchants' carts, to the dirty windows of a small pub, the soot-stained faces of children chasing pigeons in the street. At every turn, a new emotion flitted across her face. Appreciation, longing, delight. Watching her was strangely exhausting. After a few minutes, I couldn't stand it any longer. I cleared my throat.
Did one of them give you those bruises?
Who?
Your enemies.
Oh, she said brightly. Yeah, well, two, actually.
Two?
I stared at her, incredulous, tried to imagine the tiny creature before me battling two people at once, then remembered her trapping me backstage, tricking the audience into believing I'd assaulted her. I scowled. She was more than capable. The streets widened as we reached the outskirts of East End. The Dolor soon glinted in the bright afternoon sun ahead of us. The Archbishop waited beside his carriage. To my surprise, so did Jean-Luc. Of course, he would be the witness. The reality of the situation crashed over me like a bag of bricks upon seeing my friend. I was actually going to marry this woman, this creature. This heathen who scaled rooftops and robbed aristocrats, who brawled and dressed like a man and had a name to match. She wasn't Seelie. She was the furthest thing from Seelie God could have possibly created. Seelie was gentle and well-mannered, polite, proper, kind. She would have never embarrassed me, never presented herself as such a spectacle. I glared at the woman who was to be my wife. Torn and blood-spattered dress, bruised face and broken fingers, scarred throat, and a smirk that left little doubt as to how she'd come to receive each injury. She arched a brow. See something you like? I looked away. Seelie would be heartbroken when she learned what I'd done. She deserved better than this, better than me.
Come now.
The Archbishop motioned us to the deserted riverbank. A dead fish was our only audience, and the flock of pigeons feasting on it. Its skeleton protruded through rotted flesh, and a single eye gaped up at the clear November sky.
Let us be done with this.
The heathen must first be baptized at our Lord God's command, for ye shall not be unequally yoked. Light hath no communion with darkness.
My feet were leaden. Each step an incredible effort in the sand and mud. Jean-Luc followed closely behind. I could feel his grin on my neck. I didn't want to imagine what he now thought of me, of this. The Archbishop hesitated before striding into the gray water. He glanced back at the heathen, the first hint of uncertainty on his face, as if unsure she would follow.
Please change your mind. I prayed, please forget this madness and send her to prison where she belongs.
But then I would lose my Balisarda, my life, my vows, my purpose. A small, ugly voice at the back of my mind scoffed.
He could pardon you if he wanted. No one would question his judgment. You could remain a chasseur without marrying a criminal.
So why didn't he? Chagrin washed through me at the very thought. Of course he couldn't pardon me. The people believed I'd accosted her. It didn't matter I hadn't. They thought I had. Even if the Archbishop explained, even if she confessed, people would still whisper. They would doubt. They would question the chasseur's integrity. Worse still, they might question the Archbishop himself, his motivations. We'd already ensnared ourselves in the lie. The people believed she was my wife. If word spread otherwise, the Archbishop would be branded a liar. That couldn't happen. Like it or not, this heathen would become my wife. She stomped out after the Archbishop, as if to reaffirm the fact. He scowled, wiping away the flecks of water she splashed on his face.
What an interesting turn of events.
Jean-Luc's eyes danced with laughter as he watched the heathen. She appeared to be arguing with the Archbishop about something.
Of course she was.
She tricked me.
The confession stung. When I didn't elaborate, he turned to look at me. The laughter in his eyes dimmed.
What about Seelie?
I forced the words out, hating myself for them. Celie knew we wouldn't marry. I hadn't told him about her rejection. I hadn't been able to stomach his ridicule, or worse, his pity. He'd asked once, after Philippa's death, about my intentions with her. Shame burned in my gut. I'd lied through my teeth, telling him my vows meant too much, telling him I'd never marry. Yet here I was. He pursed his lips, regarding me shrewdly. Still, sorry. He stared out at the heathen, who had pointed a broken finger at the archbishop's nose. Marriage to such a creature will not be easy.
Is marriage ever easy?
Perhaps not, but she seems particularly intolerable. He flashed me a half-hearted grin. I suppose she has to move into the tower, doesn't she? I couldn't bring myself to return his smile.
Yes.
He sighed.
Pity.
We watched in silence as the archbishop's face grew steadily stonier, as he finally lost patience and jerked her toward him by the nape of her neck, as he threw her underwater and held her there a second too long. I didn't blame him. Her soul would take longer to cleanse than a normal person's. 2 seconds too long. The archbishop appeared to be at war with himself. His body shook with the effort of keeping her under, and his eyes were wide, crazed. Surely he wasn't going to... 3 seconds too long. I plunged into the water. Jean-Luc crashed after me. We threw ourselves forward, but our panic was unfounded. The archbishop released her just as we reached them, and she sprang out of the water like an angry, hissing cat. Water cascaded down her hair and face and dress. I reached out to steady her, but she shoved me away. I yielded a step as she whirled, spluttering toward the archbishop. Fille de pute! Before I could move to stop her, she dove at him. His eyes flew open as he lost his footing and tumbled backward into the water, limbs flailing. Jean-Luc rushed to help him. I seized her, pinning her arms to her sides before she could tackle him back into the water. She didn't seem to notice. Conald! Salud! She thrashed in my arms, kicking water everywhere. I'm going to kill you! I'm going to rip those robes off your shoulders and strangle you with them, you misshapen, foul-smelling piece of shit! All three of us gaped at her, eyes wide, mouths open. The archbishop recovered first, his face purpled, and a strangled sound escaped his throat. How dare you speak to me so? He jerked away from Jean-Luc, waving a finger in her face. I realized his mistake a split second before she lunged. Tightening my grip, I managed to haul her away before she could sink her teeth into his knuckle. I was about to marry a wild animal.
Let me go!
Her elbow sank deep into my stomach.
No.
More a gasp than a word, but still I held on. She let out a frustrated noise then, something between a growl and a scream, and went mercifully still. I sent up a silent prayer of thanks before dragging her back to shore. The archbishop and Jean-Luc joined us shortly thereafter. Thank you, Reed, the archbishop sniffed, wringing out his robes and readjusting the pectoral cross around his neck. Disdain dripped from his features when he finally addressed the Hellcat.
Must we shackle you for the ceremony? Perhaps procure a muzzle?
You tried to kill me.
He looked down his nose at her. Believe me, child, if I had wanted to kill you, you would be dead.
Her eyes blazed. Likewise. Jean-Luc choked on a laugh. The archbishop stepped forward, his eyes narrowing to slits.
Release her, Reed. I should like to get this whole sordid affair behind us.
Gladly. To my surprise and disappointment, she didn't flee when I let her go. She merely crossed her arms and planted her feet, staring at each of us in turn, obstinately, sullenly, a silent challenge. We kept our distance.
Make this quick, she grumbled.
The archbishop inclined his head. Step forward, both of you, and join hands. We stared at each other. Neither moved.
Oh, hurry up,
Jean-Luc shoved me roughly from behind, and I surrendered a step, watched in silent fury as she refused to bridge the remaining distance. Waited. After several long seconds, she rolled her eyes and stepped forward. When I extended my hands, she stared at them as if they were spotted with leprosy. one. I forced myself to breathe, in through my nose, out through my mouth, two. Her brows furrowed. She watched me with a bemused expression, obviously questioning my mental capacity, three. Four. She took my hands, grimaced as if in pain. Five. I realized a second too late she was in physical pain. I immediately loosened my grip on her broken fingers. Six. The Archbishop cleared his throat. Let us begin. He turned to me. Will thou, Reed Florin Diggory, have this woman to be thy wedded wife, to live together after God's ordinance in the holy estate of matrimony? Will thou love her, comfort her, honor and keep her in sickness and in health, and forsaking all others, keep thee only unto her so long as you both shall live? My vision narrowed to a speck of white amidst the pigeons. A dove. My head spun. They all stared at me, waiting for me to speak, but my throat constricted, choking me. I couldn't marry this woman. I couldn't. Once acknowledged, the thought latched deep, sinking its claws into every fiber of my being. There had to be another way, any other way. Small warm fingers squeezed my own. My eyes darted up and met piercing blue-green. No, more blue than green now. Steely. Reflecting the iron water of the Dolor behind her. She swallowed and nodded almost imperceptibly. In that brief moment, I understood. The doubt, the hesitation, the mourning of a future I'd never have. It belonged to her as well. Gone was the spitting hellcat. Now there was only a woman. And she was small. And she was frightened. And she was strong. And she was asking me to be the same. I didn't know why I did it. She was a thief, a criminal, and I owed her nothing. She'd ruined my life when she dragged me on that stage. If I agreed, I was certain she'd do her best to continue doing so. But I returned the pressure anyway. Felt the two small words rise to my lips unbidden. I will. The Archbishop turned to her. I maintained the pressure between our hands, careful of her broken fingers. What's your name? He asked abruptly. Your full name. Louise Margot LaRue. I frowned. LaRue. It was a common enough surname among the criminals in East End, but usually a pseudonym. It literally meant the streets. LaRue. The Archbishop eyed her suspiciously, echoing my own doubts. You should know, if this name proves false, your marriage to Captain Diggory will be annulled. I need not remind you of your fate should this happen.
I know the law.
Fine. He waved a hand. Will thou, Louise Margot LaRue, have this man to be thy wedded husband, to live together after God's ordinance in the holy estate of matrimony? Will thou obey him and serve him, love, honor, and keep him in sickness and in health, and forsaking all others, keep thee only unto him, so long as you both shall live?
I could see the snort rising to her face, but she resisted, kicking a clump of sand at the birds instead. They scattered with cries of alarm. A lump rose in my throat as the dove took flight. I will.
The Archbishop continued without pausing. By the power vested in me, I pronounce you husband and wife in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He paused, and every muscle in my body tensed, waiting for the next line. As if reading my thoughts, he cast me a scathing look. My cheeks flamed once more. For as the Lord God says, he clasped his hands and bowed his head, two are better than one. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. He straightened. With a grim smile, it is done. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. We shall sign the certificate of marriage upon our return, and the matter shall be settled.
He moved toward the waiting carriage, but stopped short, turning to scowl at me.
Of course, the marriage must be consummated to be legally binding.
She stiffened beside me, staring resolutely at the Archbishop, her mouth tight, her eyes tense. Heat washed over me, hotter and fiercer than before.
Yes, Your Eminence.
He nodded, satisfied, and stepped into the carriage. Jean-Luc climbed in after him, winking.
If possible, my humiliation fanned and spread. Good.
The Archbishop snapped the carriage door shut.
See that it's executed quickly. A witness shall visit your room later to confirm.
My stomach plummeted as he disappeared down the street.
Part 2. Petit à petit, l'oiseau fait son nid. Little by little, the bird makes its nest. French proverb. Consummation. Lou. Cathédrale Saint-Cécile de Césarine rose up before me, a sinister specter of spires and towers and flying buttresses. Jewel-toned windows leered in the sunlight. Rosewood doors, carved and embedded in white stone, gaped open as we climbed the steps, and a handful of chasseurs spilled out. Behave yourself, my new husband muttered. I smirked but said nothing. A chasseur stepped in front of me.
Identification?
My husband dipped his head stiffly.
This is my wife, Louise.
I stared at him, amazed the words had managed to escape through his clenched teeth. As usual, he ignored me. The chasseur in front of me blinked. Blinked again.
Your wife, Captain Diggory?
He offered a barely perceptible nod, and I truly feared for his poor teeth. They'd surely chip if he kept gnashing them together.
Yes.
The chasseur risked a glance at me.
This is highly unusual. Is the Archbishop aware? He's expecting us. Of course.
The chasseur turned to the page boy who just appeared.
Inform the Archbishop that Captain Diggory and his wife have arrived.
He cast another furtive glance in my direction as the boys scurried away. I winked back at him. My husband made an impatient noise and seized my arm, steering me forcefully toward the door. I tugged my arm away. There's no need to cripple me.
I told you to behave.
Oh, please. I winked. It's not like I stripped and sang Big Titty Liddy. A commotion rose behind us, and we turned as one. More chasseurs marched up the street, carrying what looked like a body between them. Though they'd wrapped it in cloth for propriety's sake, there was no mistaking the hand that dangled below the sheet, or the vines that had grown between its fingers, or the bark that dappled its skin. I leaned closer, despite my husband yanking me back, and inhaled the familiar sweetness emanating from the body. Interesting. One of the chasseurs hastened to conceal the hand.
We found them just outside the city, Captain.
My husband jerked his head toward the alley beside the church without a word, and the chasseurs hurried away. Though my husband led me inside, I craned my neck to watch them go.
What was that about? Never you mind.
Where are they taking him?
I said never you. Enough!
The Archbishop strode into the foyer, eyeing the mud and water pooling at my feet in distaste. He'd already changed into fresh coral robes, of course, and washed the flecks of mud and sand from his face. I resisted the urge to fidget with my torn dress or finger comb my matted hair. It didn't matter what I looked like. The Archbishop could piss off.
The marriage certificate is waiting in my study. From where should we retrieve your possessions?
Feigning disinterest, I wrung out my soaking hair.
I have none. You have none?
He repeated slowly, looking me over with disapproval.
That's what I said, yes. Unless you and your cronies would like to ransack Soleil et Lune's attic.
I've been borrowing costumes for years now. He scowled.
I expected little else. We shall, however, endeavor to find you more presentable garments. I won't dishonor Reed by having his bride appear a heathen, even if she is one.
How dare you? I clutched the front of my ruined dress in mock affront. I am a God-fearing Christian woman now. My husband hauled me away before I could utter another word. I swore I heard one of his teeth crack. After hastily signing the marriage certificate in the study, my husband steered me down a narrow, dusty corridor, clearly trying to avoid the crowded foyer. God forbid anyone saw his new wife. Rumors were probably already circulating the tower about the scandal. A spiral staircase tucked in the back of the corridor caught my attention. Unlike the archaic rosewood staircases nestled throughout the cathedral, this one was metal and clearly built after the original construction. And there was something there, in the air of the stairwell. I tugged on his arm and inhaled covertly. Where does that staircase lead? He turned, following my gaze, before shaking his head curtly.
Nowhere you'll be visiting. Access beyond the dormitories is restricted. Only approved personnel are allowed on the upper floors.
Well then, count me in. I said nothing more, however, allowing him to lead me up several different flights of stairs to a plain wooden door. He pushed it open without looking back at me. I paused outside, staring at the words inscribed above the doorway. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. I shivered. So this was the infamous Chasseur Tower. Though no visible changes marked the corridor beyond, there was something austere about the place. It lacked warmth, benevolence, the atmosphere as bleak and rigid as the men who resided within. My husband poked his head back through the door a second later, glancing between the terrifying inscription and me.
What's wrong?
Nothing. I hurried after him, ignoring the cold trickle of dread down my spine as I crossed the threshold. There was no going back now. I was in the belly of the beast, soon to be in the bed of the beast. Like hell. He led me down the hall, careful not to touch me.
Through here.
He gestured to one of the many doors lining the corridor, and I brushed past him into the room, and stopped short. It was a matchbox. A painfully simple, miserably drab little matchbox, with no defining characteristics whatsoever. The walls were white, the floorboards dark. Only a bed and a desk filled the space. Worse, he had no personal effects whatsoever. No trinkets, no books, not even a basket for dirty laundry. When I spotted the narrow window, too high on the wall to watch the sunset, I truly died a little inside. My husband must have been the most insipid person ever born. The door clicked shut behind me. It sounded final, like a jail cell clanging shut. He moved in my periphery, and I whirled, but he only lifted his hand slowly, as if placating a feral cat.
I'm just taking off my jacket.
He shrugged out of his sodden coat and draped it across the desk, before starting to unbuckle his bandolier. You can stop right there, I said. No more clothes coming off. His jaw tightened.
I'm not going to force myself on you.
His nose wrinkled in disgust.
Louise.
It's Lou.
He twitched visibly at the name. Is my name offensive to you?
Everything about you was offensive to me.
He pulled the chair from the desk and sat down, heaving a great sigh.
You're a criminal.
There's no need to sound so self-righteous, Chas. You're here because of you, not me. He scowled.
This is your fault.
Shrugging, I moved to sit on his immaculately made bed. He cringed when my wet dress soiled the quilt.
You should have let me go at the theater.
I didn't know you were going to... that you were going to frame me.
I'm a criminal, I reasoned, not bothering to correct him. It didn't matter now, anyway. I behaved criminally. You should have known better. He gestured angrily to my bruised face and broken fingers.
And how has behaving criminally treated you?
I'm alive, aren't I?
Are you?
He arched a copper brow.
You look like someone nearly killed you.
I waved a careless hand and smirked. Hazard of the job.
Not anymore.
Excuse me? His eyes blazed.
You're my wife now, whether we like it or not. No man will ever touch you that way again.
Tension, taut and heavy, settled between us at his words. I tilted my head and stalked toward him, a slow smile spreading across my face. He glared at me, but his breathing hitched when I leaned over him. His eyes flicked to my mouth. Even sitting, he was nearly taller than me.
Good.
I curled my hand around one of the knives in his bandolier. Flicking it to his throat before he could react, I dug the tip in hard enough to draw blood. His hand came down on my wrist, crushing it, but he didn't force me away. I leaned closer. Our lips were only a hair's breadth apart.
But you should know, I breathed, that if a man touches me in any way without my permission, I'll cut him open.
I paused for effect, dragging the knife from his throat to his navel and beyond. He swallowed hard.
Even if that man is my husband.
We have to consummate the marriage.
His voice was low, raw, angry.
Neither of us can afford an annulment.
I pushed away from him roughly, jerking up my sleeve to reveal the skin of my inner arm. Eyes never leaving his, I dug the tip of the knife in and sliced down. He moved to stop me, but it was too late. Blood welled. I ripped the blanket from his bed and let the blood drip on his bedsheets.
There.
I stalked to the bathing chamber, ignoring his shocked expression.
Marriage consummated.
I savored the pain in my arm. It felt real, unlike everything else in this wretched day. I cleaned it slowly, deliberately, before dressing it with a cloth from the cupboard in the corner. Married. If someone had told me this morning I'd be married by sunset, I would have laughed. Laughed, and then probably spat in their face. The chasseur pounded on the door.
Are you all right?
God, leave me alone. The door cracked open.
Are you decent?
No,
I lied. I'm coming in.
He poked his head in first, eyes narrowing as he saw all the blood.
Was that necessary?
I'm nothing if not thorough. He tugged the dressing down to examine the cut, forcing me to look squarely at his chest. He hadn't yet changed, and his shirt was still wet from the river. It clung to his chest in a particularly distracting way. I forced myself to stare at the tub instead, but my thoughts kept drifting back to him. He really was too tall, abnormally tall, entirely too big for this small of a space. I wondered if he had some sort of disease. My eyes cut back to his chest. Probably.
They'll think I murdered you.
He replaced the dressing and opened the small cupboard again, grabbing another cloth to mop up the floor and basin. I finished wrapping my arm and joined him.
What do we do with the evidence?
I wiped my bloody hands on my hem.
We burn it. There's a furnace downstairs.
My eyes lit up. Yes! I set a warehouse on fire once. One match and the whole thing went up like a smokestack. He stared at me in horror.
You set a building on fire?
These people obviously had hearing impairments. That's what I just said, isn't it? He shook his head and knotted the towel.
Your dress,
he said without looking at me. I glanced down at it. What about it?
It's covered in blood. It needs to go too.
Right, I scoffed, rolling my eyes. I don't have any other clothes.
That's your problem. Hand it over.
I glared at him. He glanced back. I don't have any other clothes, I repeated slowly. Definite hearing impairment.
You should have thought about that before you slashed open your arm.
He thrust out his hand insistently. Another second passed. Fine, then. A wild little laugh escaped my throat. Just fine. Two could play this game. I attempted to jerk my dress over my head, but my fingers, still stiff and painful, prevented me from succeeding. The wet fabric caught around my neck instead, strangling me, and I nearly broke the rest of my fingers in a desperate attempt to pry it away. Strong hands soon reached forward to assist me. I leapt away on instinct, and my dress ripped as easily as it had done in the theater. Flustered, I threw it in his face. I wasn't naked. Soft, flexible undergarments covered my sensitive bits, but it was enough. When he extracted himself from my dress, his face was burning. He averted his eyes quickly.
There's a shirt in there.
He nodded to the cupboard before eyeing the wound on my arm.
I'll tell a maid to bring you a nightgown. Don't let her see your arm.
I rolled my eyes again as he left, slipping into one of his absurdly large shirts. It fell down past my knees. When I was sure he'd gone, I crept back out to the bedroom. Golden light from the sunset shone through the lone window. I dragged the desk over to it, stacking the chair on top, before climbing up. Balancing my elbows on the ledge, I rested my chin in my hands and sighed. The sun was still beautiful, and despite everything, it was still setting. I closed my eyes and basked in its warmth. A maid soon entered to check the blood-specked sheets. Satisfied, she stripped them without a word. My stomach sank slowly to the floor as I watched her rigid back. She didn't look at me. Do you have a nightgown? I asked hopefully, unable to stand the silence any longer. She curtsied, prim and proper, but still avoided my eyes. Market doesn't open until morning, madame. She left without another word. I watched her go with a sense of foreboding. If I'd hoped for an ally in this wretched tower, I'd been grossly optimistic. Even the staff had been brainwashed. But if they thought they could break me with silence, with isolation, they were in for a fun surprise. Sliding down from my tower of furniture, I prowled the room for something I could use against my captor. Blackmail, a weapon, anything. I racked my brain, remembering the tricks I'd used on Andre and Gru over the years. After ripping open the desk drawer, I rummaged through its contents with all the courtesy my husband deserved. There wasn't much to inspect. A couple of quills, a pot of ink, a faded old Bible, and a leather notebook. When I picked it up, flicking eagerly through the pages, several loose sheets fluttered to the ground. Letters. I bent closer, a slow smile spreading across my face. Love letters. A very confused, coppery-haired chasseur poked me awake that night. I'd been curled in the tub, wrapped up in his ridiculous shirt, when he'd stormed in and impaled my rib with his finger. What? I batted him away crossly, grimacing at the sudden light in my eyes.
What are you doing?
He leaned back, still crouched on his knees, and set the candle on the floor.
When you weren't in bed, I thought maybe you'd...
Left? I said shrewdly. It's still on the agenda. His face hardened.
That would be a mistake.
Saw a relative. I yawned, curling up once more.
Why are you in the tub?
Well, I certainly wasn't going to sleep in your bed, was I? This seemed the best alternative. There was a pause.
You don't have to sleep in here, he finally muttered. Take the bed.
No thanks. It's not that I don't trust you, but, well, that's exactly what it is.
And you think the tub can protect you?
No. I sighed, eyelids fluttering. They were impossibly heavy. I can lock the door. Wait. I jolted awake then. I did lock the door. How are you in here? He grinned, and I cursed my treacherous heart for stuttering slightly. The smile transformed his entire face, like the sun. I scowled, crossing my arms and nestling deeper into his shirt. I didn't want to invite that comparison, but now I couldn't get the image out of my head. His coppery hair, tousled, as if he too had fallen asleep somewhere he shouldn't, didn't help. "Where have you been?" I snapped. His grin faltered.
"I fell asleep in the sanctuary. I needed some space."
I frowned, and the silence between us lengthened. After a long moment, I asked, "How did you get in here?"
"You're not the only one who can pick a lock."
"Really?" I sat up, interest piqued. "Where would a holy chasseur learn such a trick?"
"The Archbishop."
"Of course. He's such a hypocritical ass." The fragile camaraderie between us crumbled instantly. He shoved to his feet.
"Never disrespect him, not in front of me. He's the best man I've ever known, the bravest. When I was 3, he..."
I tuned him out, rolling my eyes. It was quickly becoming a habit around him.
"Look, Shas, you're my husband, so I feel I should be honest with you in saying I'll gladly murder the Archbishop at the first opportunity." "He'd kill you before you even lifted a finger."
A fanatical gleam shone in his eyes, and I raised a politely skeptical brow.
"I'm serious. He's the most accomplished leader in Chasseur history. He's slain more witches than any other man alive. His skill is legend. He is legend."
"He is old."
"You underestimate him."
"Seems to be a theme around here." I yawned and turned away from him, shifting to find a softer bit of tub. "Look, this has been fun, but it's time for my beauty sleep. I need to look my best for tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?"
"I'm going back to the theater," I murmured, eyes already closing. What I caught of the performance this morning sounded fascinating. There was another pause, much longer than before. I peeked at him over my shoulder. He fidgeted with the candle for a few seconds before taking a deep breath.
"Now that you're my wife, it's best if you stay within Chasseur Tower."
I lurched upright, sleep instantly forgotten.
"I don't think that's best at all. People saw your face at the theater."
Anxiety flared in my stomach.
"And now they know you're my wife. Everything you do will be monitored. Everything you say will reflect back on me, on the Chasseurs. The Archbishop doesn't trust you. He thinks it best you stay here until you can learn to behave yourself."
He gave me a hard look.
"I agree with him."
"That's unfortunate. I thought you had better sense than the Archbishop," I snapped. "You can't keep me locked in this trou à merde." I might have laughed at his appalled expression if I hadn't been so angry.
"Watch your mouth."
His own mouth tightened, and his nostrils flared.
"You're my wife."
"Yes, you mentioned that. Your wife. Not your slave, nor your property. I signed that stupid piece of paper to avoid imprisonment."
"We can't trust you."
His voice rose over mine.
"You're a criminal. You're impulsive. God forbid you even open your mouth outside this room."
"Shit, damn, fuck—"
"Stop it."
Blood crept up his throat, and his chest rose and fell heavily as he struggled to control his breathing.
"God, woman, how can you speak so? Have you no shame?"
"I won't stay here," I seethed.
"You'll do as you're told."
The words were flat, final.
Like hell.
I opened my mouth to tell him just that, but he'd already stormed out of the room, slamming the door shut with enough force to rattle my teeth.
The Interrogation. Reed. I woke long before my wife, stiff, sore, aching from a fitful night on the floor. Though I'd argued with myself, reasoned vehemently that she'd chosen to suffer in the tub. I hadn't been able to climb into bed. Not when she was injured. Not when she might wake in the night and change her mind. No, I'd offered her the bed. The bed was hers. I regretted my chivalry the moment I stepped into the training yard. Word of my new circumstance had obviously swept through the tower. Man after man rose to meet me, each with a determined glint in his eye, each waiting impatiently for his turn, each attacking with uncharacteristic belligerence. "Long night, huh, Captain?" my first partner sneered after clipping my shoulder. The next managed to hit my ribs. He glared. "It isn't right, a criminal sleeping 3 rooms from me." Jean-Luc grinned. "I don't think they were doing much sleeping. She could cut our throats. She consorts with witches. It isn't right.
It isn't fair.
I heard she's a whore."
I bashed the handle of my sword into the last one's head, and he sprawled to the ground.
Extending my arms, I turned in a slow circle, challenging anyone who dared confront me. Blood ran from a cut on my forehead. "Does anyone else have a problem with my new circumstance?" Jean-Luc howled with laughter. He, in particular, seemed to enjoy my trial, judgment, and execution until he entered the ring. "Give me your best, old man." I was older than him by 3 months. But even battered, even exhausted, even old, I would die before yielding to Jean-Luc. The fight lasted only a few minutes. Though he was quick and nimble, I was stronger. After a good hit, he too crumpled, clutching his ribs. I rubbed the blood from my freshly split lip before helping him up. "We'll need to interrupt your conjugal bliss to interrogate her about Tremblay's, you know. Like it or not, the men are right." He touched a knot under his eye gingerly. "She does consort with witches. The Archbishop thinks she might be able to lead us to them." I almost rolled my eyes. The Archbishop had already confided his hopes to me, but I didn't tell Jean-Luc that. He enjoyed feeling superior.
"I know."
Wooden swords still clacked and bodies thudded together as our brothers continued around us. No others approached, but they shot me covert looks between rounds. Men who had once respected me, men who had once laughed, joked, and called me friend. In only a few hours, I'd become the object of my wife's rejection and my brethren's scorn. Both stung more than I cared to admit. Breakfast had been worse. My brethren hadn't allowed me to eat a bite. Half had been too eager to hear about my wedding night, and the others had studiously ignored me.
"What was it like? Did you enjoy it?"
"Don't tell the Archbishop, but I tried it once. Her name was Babette." Of course, I hadn't actually wanted to consummate with her. And my brothers, they would come around once they realized I wasn't going anywhere, which I wasn't. Crossing the yard, I threw my sword on the rack. The men parted for me in waves. Their whispers bit and snapped at my back. To my irritation, Jean-Luc had no such scruples. He followed me like a plague of locusts.
"I must confess I'm anxious to see her again," he ensured his sword landed on top of mine. "After that performance on the beach, I think our brothers are in for a real treat."
"I would have preferred the locusts."
"She isn't that,"
I disagreed in an undertone. Jean-Luc continued as if he hadn't heard me.
"It's been a long time since a woman was in the tower. Who was the last? Captain Barret's wife? She wasn't anything to look at. Yours is much nicer. I'll thank you not to speak of my wife."
The whispers peaked behind us as we neared the tower. Uninhibited laughter rang across the yard as we stepped inside. I gritted my teeth and pretended I couldn't hear them.
"What she is or isn't is no concern of yours."
His eyebrows shot up.
"What's this? Is that possessiveness I detect? Surely you haven't forgotten the love of your life so easily."
"Celie." Her name cut through me like a serrated knife. Last night, I'd written her a final letter. She deserved to hear what had happened from me, and now we were done. Truly done this time. I tried and failed to swallow the lump in my throat.
"Please, please forget me."
"I could never forget you."
"You must."
The letter had left with the post at first light.
"Have you told her yet?"
Jean-Luc kept hard on my heels, just tall enough to match my stride.
Did you go to her last night? One last rendezvous with your lady?
I didn't answer.
She won't be pleased, will she? I mean, you chose not to marry her.
Lay off, Jean-Luc.
Yet now you've married a filthy street rat who tricked you into a compromising position. Or did she?
His eyes flared, and he caught my arm. I tensed, longing to break his grip or his nose.
One can't help but wonder. Why did the Archbishop force you to marry a criminal if you're innocent?
I jerked my arm away, fought to control the anger threatening to explode.
I am innocent.
He touched the knot at his eye again, lip curling into a grin.
Of course.
There you are.
The Archbishop's curt voice preceded him into the foyer. As one, we lifted our fists to our hearts and bowed. When we rose, the Archbishop's gaze fell on me.
Jean-Luc has informed me you'll be interrogating your wife today about the witch at Tremblay's.
I nodded stiffly.
You will, of course, communicate any developments to me directly.
He clasped my shoulder with an easy camaraderie that probably drove Jean-Luc mad.
We must keep a keen eye on her, Captain Diggory, lest she destroy herself and you in the process. I would attend the interrogation myself, but...
Though his voice trailed off, his meaning rang clear. But I can't stand her. I empathized.
Yes, sir. Go and fetch her, then. I shall be in my study, preparing for evening mass.
She wasn't in our room. Or the washroom.